Hello and welcome, everybody. This is Robert Forto, and you're listening to Mushing Radio here on KVRF 89.7 in the Mattsu Valley. RadioFreePalmer.org is our live streaming site. You can find all of our episodes over on iTunes. Just search for Dog Works Radio. And calling in from California is our co-host. His name is Alex Stein. Alex, how's it going?
It's going great, Robert. I have to tell you, I've been watching a lot of people posting on Facebook and on Twitter about going up to Anchorage, people who are volunteers and fans and officials talking about coming in for the Iditarod, and it's really just a very exciting time, only a few days away right now.
Only a few days away, that is right. Tomorrow night is the banquet downtown. It's a huge gala. It's where the picks for the start of the race, the musher draw, happens. A very nice meal there at the Denina Center. And then Friday is meetings and some formal things for the mushers. And then Saturday morning is the big event, isn't it?
Yeah. And in addition to all of that, there was the vet check was this morning. And there's been a teachers' conference for teachers using the Iditarod as part of their lesson plans going on all week. That'll continue, I think, until Friday. So a lot of exciting stuff going on.
There is, and just an announcement: we will be doing our nightly coverage here on Mushing Radio. We typically do it about 6 or 7 o'clock ish. Alaska time, and we put it up on the web as soon as we're done. We do it a little bit fluid because, you know, Alex, sometimes life gets in the way and we have to make adjustments to our schedule. Is that right?
Yeah, and we've been doing this, I think, now for 5 years. Is that correct?
Yes, I think it is.
Yeah, and it's always a lot of fun, so I would encourage people to tune in for that. Before we get to tonight's topic, there's a couple of Iditarod-related, a little bit of Iditarod-related news. Scott Jansen, whom fans of the show should be familiar with, the Mushing Mortician, had a medical issue. He didn't specify exactly what it was, but he said that he had some tests and he needed a little bit of time to do more tests and possibly, you know, adjust some medication or whatever. So he is not going to be competing. Dave Branholm, who's run 5 Iditarods in the past, is going to run his team. People might remember him as one of the people who helped rescue Hugh Neff in 2014 when he was stuck out on the ice. Jim Lanier also pulled out a couple weeks ago. I believe he is having a knee operation, and Gunnar Johnson, who's from Minneapolis and ran 1 Iditarod in the 90s, is going to run his team. And then Brent Sass withdrew after he scratched in the Yukon Quest, and then Ed Steelstra also withdrew during the Quest. I believe that was in favor of having his dogs, or having some of his dogs, run on the team of his kennel partner, Laura Neese, who's making her rookie run this year.
Am I mistaking, Alex, that this seems to be a lot of mushers who have picked somebody else to run their teams this year? Do you know anything about the qualifications for that? Do they have to go through some kind of board? I don't know the particulars.
I am not sure what the exact particulars are, but I know that when there is a withdrawal for medical reasons, the musher is allowed to designate somebody else who would themselves be qualified to run Iditarod to run their team. So you can't just sub someone in if you decide that you're just not going to run. But when there are medical issues, I believe the Iditarod Trail Committee has, you know, at their discretion, can allow someone else to run the team.
And it's my understanding it has to be an Iditarod veteran. It definitely cannot be a rookie that may be qualified for the Iditarod and has not applied yet, because one of the key components to a rookie's Iditarod run is to attend the rookie meetings in December and all of those extra things that they have to do. So I assume that everybody that does this has ran Iditarod at least once and completed it. Is that your take on it as well?
Yes, I believe that's correct. And, you know, every year we have a certain number of mushers who withdraw before the race starts. It does seem like we have a lot this year. There are 12 people who've withdrawn, including Lance Mackey and Jan Steves and Michael Supernaut, Sebastian Schnulli. So some fairly well-known names, or at least names that Iditarod fans would be familiar with. And yet we still have going out, we still have 72 teams who are going to be running the race.
Excellent. All right, so let's jump into the topic tonight. We talked about this on our last show when we did it live a couple of weeks ago. We wanted to talk about the drop bags, and we talked about how for the month leading up to, and sometimes much earlier than that, the mushers are preparing their drop bags. It is a major ordeal, a major component of the race to get all of those ready to go. What can you tell us about sort of the drop bag process? And then I will mention, as a musher, what are some things that go inside?
Right. Well, I'm not sure what the exact dates are, but the mushers have to get all of their drop bags ready. And the way this happens is each musher is given bags that have the name of various checkpoints on them, and they can fill the bags with a lot of different things. Usually there is dog food in. Sometimes there's special treats for the dogs, sometimes booties, human food, things like that. So they bring all of these drop bags, I believe, to a central location in Anchorage, and then they are sent out on the trail. And generally what will happen is, at most of these checkpoints, since the temperatures are fairly low, generally below freezing, the drop bags are, when they arrive, they'll be put outside somewhere and just basically left outside sealed, so that when the mushers come to get them, they just get to the checkpoint, they go over to where the bags are, their name is on the bag, so you know that you're getting the right bag, and they just can come and pick their bags. Now, a lot of times, it's a tricky thing because mushers aren't sure exactly when they'll be able to get to a certain checkpoint. You always have your race plan, but you're never sure if it will take a couple of hours longer, or if you'll stop to rest, or where exactly you might be taking your 24. So as a general rule, people tend to ship out more stuff than they will use in the race, just because you don't want to be in a situation where you desperately need something and you don't have it. So when mushers will sometimes go through checkpoints and not stop to take the bags or the stuff that they've sent ahead, what happens then is the race officials will go through the bag after the musher has left. My understanding, and this may have changed, but I think this is still true, is that dog food will not be returned.
Right.
But personal items will be returned. So, for example, if you know that you are going to need, or you may need, a certain parka for some stretch of the race, you can send that parka in your drop bag. If you then don't pick it up, that parka would be sent back. But the dog food that you sent to that same checkpoint would not be sent back. And usually what happens is it's distributed to local dogs in the villages where the checkpoints are.
Right. That also goes in saying with human food as well. And you'll often find when people drop out of the race or withdrawn or scratch or whatever, that their drop bags will still be along the trail. They're going to go from the start all the way to Nome. And it's sort of a mystery what's in those bags. And often you will find people sharing those bags, in particular the food and the dog food, et cetera. And, some people pack much more gourmet foods than others, and it could be a very welcome treat, especially for the back of the packers when they pull in and they find out that one of the front runners left behind, tamales or cheesecake or whatever may be in some of those bags, and it could be a welcomed respite on the trail. Some of the things that go into the drop bags, Alex, by and large, it is dog food, and then there you will have a variety of things. You'll have kibble and fish for snacks and meat of various types, beaver and beef and liver and chicken and all different types of food items for the dog. And you would be surprised just how little human things go in those bags. As you mentioned, you may send out a parka or something like that along the trail. You can also send out a second sled, I believe, from McGrath onward, or it may be Unicleet onward. I'm not exactly sure on that. But also, some of the things that I always pack in my drop bags, every drop bag, I always pack extra gloves, extra socks, extra batteries, because you can never have too many batteries. I will always pack some type of hard candy to keep your mouth moist. I will always pack 5-hour energy drinks, matches, some type of lighter, getting the fire going, whether it's insulation or fire starter of some type. What works real well is dryer lint that's soaked in wax. I also pack extra sunglasses, chapstick. All of those things go right on top of my drop bag. So as soon as I get into the checkpoint, I can pull out my human part of the drop bag, and I can have that immediately available. So if my socks are wet or my hands are wet or I need batteries for my headlamp or whatever, that is right there at my disposal. And then as you're working your way through the checkpoint, you're gradually working your way down the bag. So you're feeding your dogs the kibble and you're making your own meal and doing all these other things. But as you mentioned, many people pack much more than they can possibly use. I know we talked about it on last show where the average weight is about 1,600 pounds, but there has been people that's packed and sent out well over 2,000, 2,500 pounds as well.
Right. As you mentioned, it's more because you're never quite sure when you'll be where, and that is an issue in I imagine all races, but particularly when you start getting to races that are many, many hundreds of miles long or 1,000 miles long, you're never quite sure if you'll be able to make it from one checkpoint to the next in one run, or if it will take you two runs. So you need to make sure that you have enough food for your dogs, first of all, because you never want to be in a situation where your dogs don't have food, and you are forced to, get the food from somewhere else or borrow food from someone that sort of situation. So you always want to make sure that you're planning for contingencies, in a race where you're not quite sure how long it will take to get to any checkpoint. And that's because of the speed and condition of your dogs, but it's also because of weather. And especially on a very long race like Iditarod or the Yukon Quest, you are never quite sure what the weather is going to be, and it can come in and change very, very quickly.
Yeah, and those drop bags truly are your lifeline. That's all you have, in particular, between one checkpoint and the next. So if you're going on a run, over 70 miles or so, there will have to be a time at some point where most teams are going to have to stop and rest and feed their dogs. They will have to camp. And remember, camp is not camp. Like 99.9% of people that are listening to this show think camping is, where you're setting up a tent and, you know, starting a fire and kicking back with a beer. Camp with your dogs is work for your dogs. But it's key that that people understand that if you do not have what you need, you will not be able to get it until you get to that next checkpoint. Sort of a rule of thumb, Alex, is most mushers will snack their dogs about every 2 to 4 hours. So if they're on the trail for 8 or 9 hours, they will also snack their dogs 3 or 4 times during that day. So all of those extra snacks, and it's typically fish snacks, salmon snacks, and cut up into pieces about the size of salmon steaks like you would get in a restaurant, and they feed those to the dogs along the way. But one thing I do want to mention is the booties. Almost every musher's biggest race expense is booties. Typically, they cost about $1 a piece, and sort of the rule of thumb is you need at least one bootie per foot for every mile that you travel. So approximately 3,000 or 4,000 booties for the Iditarod, which is $3,000 or $4,000 just in booties, because they are about $1 a piece. Of course, you can get them cheaper if you buy them in bulk, or if you're handy enough to make them yourself. But most people have to bite the bullet and buy those. So that's a huge race expense just on of itself.
Yeah. And you know, you again, because the dogs are the athletes, the mushers are important, and the mushers certainly have a very important job in the race, but the dogs are the athletes, and the dogs are running or at least walking. The dogs are on their feet, and the dogs are moving and making the sleds move for 1,000 miles. So the last thing you want is to do anything that would you know, cause your dogs to potentially injure their paws, or potentially, you know, have some sort of issue with their paw pad. So getting the right number of booties and making sure that you always have enough booties, so that you're not having to stretch it, or you're not having to, you know, let dogs go, you know, a couple of extra miles when you notice that their booties have fallen off or whatever. So making sure that you take care of that and have enough booties is one of the most important things, and one of the most important responsibilities, I think.
Right. And a couple of more things here. You had mentioned that the drop bags will come back. They do come back to the Iditarod headquarters in Wasilla. Typically, it's well after the race is over. I've been down there, and it looks like a sled graveyard, where all of the broken sleds along the trails are sort of in the back of the parking lot there at Iditarod headquarters. And, you know, everybody has, you know, it truly looks like a used car parts lot back there, just pieces of sleds everywhere and sleds stacked up on top of each other. Then, of course, the mushers can come and pick up their sleds and their bags as well. Also along the trail, Alex, The Iditarod does provide a couple of other items. They provide straw at all the checkpoints, and they fly that out well ahead of time, and that's a big volunteer job on straw day, where they pack it all up and get it prepared. They also provide heat for the cookers, and it's a product that is used in the north to keep your gasoline from freezing in your car. It's in a little yellow container. It's called heat, H-E-E-T, and that's what most people use in their cookers, and that's provided along the trail as well. But other than that, everything else is provided by the mushers, and it is up to them to get from from the race start to the finish. Is that right?
Yeah, and you know, I was looking up this afternoon before the show what the rule is regarding sleds, because I've been curious about this for a while. And officially, the Iditarod says that any musher can use up to 3 different sleds in his or her race. So that means that you can, if you want to, ship out 2 sleds to different places. And we've talked about this a little bit in the past, but just to to review, you know, a tad, you might want a different sled because there are different you know, trail conditions in different parts of the race. And in some parts of the race, you have a lot of hills, so you want to, or there might not be much snow cover. So you want to have a sled that is rugged and that is built for that type of movement. Whereas, you know, especially in the last third of the race, like from Unalakleet on, it's typically mostly along the Bering Sea. So it is a little bit flatter, and you want a sled that can go faster in those conditions. And that's why generally you have a lot of people will ship sleds to Unalakleet if they want a different sled for the last part of the race, and they'll tend to ship sleds to McGrath, not this year obviously, but because once you get to McGrath, you've passed over the gorge and the Farewell Burn and the sort of treacherous part of the early first third of the race. So obviously not everyone has two spare sleds that they can ship out somewhere. So if you get to, you are allowed to use another musher's sled. If you get to a checkpoint where another musher has a sled and has agreed to let you use it, you can do that. That will count as one of your sleds. So it's not so much the number of sleds that you ship out, but the number of different sleds that you use, and that's capped at three.
Right. Very good, Alex. We are just about out of time. We will be back on the air starting this Saturday evening after the ceremonial start, and then we will continue on at least up through the banquet. That's sort of our typical schedule. We'll talk about very interesting things that are happening during the day. Alex always has a story to tell, and he always has sort of a musher of the day, and it's almost always somebody from the middle to the back of the pack. We spend a lot of time talking about those really personal stories from those folks that a lot of folks don't hear a lot about. So if you're trying to hear about the front runners and hear the same stories that you hear on all of the other news outlets, you're probably not going to hear it on our show. So if you like those sort of personal stories, stories with a purpose, I guess we could say, definitely check out our show starting on Saturday evening. And also this year, I will be out on an expedition with a group of UAA students starting on March 11th, next Saturday, about a week after the race starts. And my wife, Michelle Forto, has been a co-host on this podcast I don't know how many times over the years. She will be joining Alex on the nightly coverage about a weekend. Is that right?
Yes, and I'm very excited because first of all, Michelle is very knowledgeable, is a musher herself, has been you know, instrumental in raising and training and working with all of your dogs. So I'm excited from that standpoint, and also Michelle is just a very, very fun person. As you know, and as I think a lot of listeners know, so this should be great while you are off on your wilderness expedition.
Excellent. All right, Alex. Well, take care. We'll talk again Saturday. Okay.
Okay. Thanks, Robert.
Thank you. On behalf of my co-host Alex Stein, this is Robert Forto. We will see you guys next time. Goodbye.